You're listening to the Party in My Plants podcast, and if you've ever wanted to snooze your booze, or if you've thought about slowing your rolling of wine down your throat, this really interesting episode is one you should sip up. Welcome to the Party in My Plants podcast, where I make healthy living as fun as a party so you'll, you know, actually want to do it and then actually feel, look, and live your best. I'm your host, Talia Pollock. Now let's get this party started. I am pumped that one of my favorite plant party products on the planet is sponsoring this episode. If you've spent but a few secs skimming my Instagram or binge watching my YouTube channel, which you should, by the way, if you haven't, but when you do, you'll see that Sun Warrior Plant Protein Powder is the Kanye to my West, the bees to my knees, the Wilson to my Castaway, something I would not want to live without. When I'm looking for a way to make my smoothies actually fill me up so I don't need a follow-up snack a few minutes after finishing my smoothie, I blend in Sun Warrior because I don't want to get bloated, gassy, or feel crappy after consuming protein powder. I use Sun Warrior. Because I am not a fan of protein powders with weird, chalky textures and nasty flavors, I use Sun Warrior. See, it's no wonder I blend Sun Warrior protein powder into every smoothie I make and bake it into almost every baked good I bake. If you want some recipes for doing the same, head to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/partyinmyplants. Click subscribe and you'll get an epic, easy Sun Warrior plant protein recipe in your inbox every month. And if you want to get your mitts on Sun Warrior for 15% less than the rest of the world pays to get their mitts on it, just use the code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on their site, sunwarrior.com. Again, in case you sneezed as I said that, I said you can use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com to save 15%, my friend. The end of the sponsorship thing. I mean, let's get into the meat of the episode, or not meat, the tofu of the episode. My guest today hits the nail right on the head when she says, "We live in a drinking world." Okay, I can't do accents. And Georgia Foster is a hypnotherapist originally from Australia who has spent many years living in London. And so she knows a thing or two about the prevalence of drinking cultures and how to actually speak with an accent, unlike myself. Georgia's aim in her work is to teach people how to establish healthy relationships with booze and to learn how to drink less rather than have to break up with that glass of vino forever. In this chat that has truly stuck with me at all my drinking events since, we dive into how our anxiety, and specifically our inner critic, are the biggest enablers of our over-drinking. If you know that your inner critic is running or ruining your life, don't freak out. Georgia has more than a few practical tips to retrain your brain and rely on that happy hour drink a little less. What I liked most about this conversation is that Georgia is by no means the booze police and that her cool as a cucumber approach is actually realistic because she'll never tell you not to enjoy a good party. She's just helping us all have a happier inner dialogue so our critics don't run rogue. Georgia, thank you so much for flying on the Party in My Plants podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Waking up nice and early over there. What, it's 7 a.m. your time? 6 a.m.?
It's 7 o'clock in the morning.
7 o'clock, bright and early, starting it with Party in My Plants. Nothing better.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm excited to talk to you about drinking. This is not a topic that I've covered yet on the show, although I've had a wine expert, a sommelier, on the show to discuss wines and notes and that kind of stuff. But you're a different kind of drinking expert. You're a leading expert in helping to remedy over-drinking behavior, right? So
correct.
How did you get into this? Why is this an area that is of interest to you?
Well, I'm Australian, and Australians are big drinkers. And I lived in London for 22 years where I had a clinic helping people for lots of different emotional reasons. And a lot of clients were coming to see me about stress, anxiety, negative thinking, sleep issues. And they would say to me, Georgia, can we work on my drinking? I think I drank a bit too much. And it started to become a bit of a theme, really. Hmm. So these clients were, because it's a very private subject, friends were saying, why are you drinking less? And now and again, someone would say, oh, I actually went to see this therapist. And it kind of went from there, really, because we live in a drinking world. I mean, there are bars everywhere. There are restaurants. There's, you know, I'm not saying that we shouldn't drink, but these clients were fully functioning people who had hard, you know, working hard, families at home, were responsible citizens of society. It's just a lot of their drinking was done at home. And I think the biggest thing for worried drinkers is they think in their 20s, oh, look, it's fine. I've just finished university and I'm partying hard and it's okay. And I'll be sensible when I get to my 30s.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes you get to your 30s and you think, I'm not doing a very good job of this. And then once you get into your 40s, a lot of the drinking can just become a habit at the end of the day.
Totally.
It can change.
A routine.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah.
Completely. And that's, the brain works on habit. And that's what I specialize in, is changing that brain relationship with alcohol.
Got it. And you use hypnotherapy, right, to really help with the changing of habits?
Yes. So I do a combination of hypnosis and a particular psychology training, which works really well together.
So how does hypnosis help somebody drink less? And just to clarify, how would you separate an alcoholic from what we're talking about here? Somebody that's just is like, I'm a functioning human. I just think I'm drinking too much. What's the difference?
Well, there are clearly defined markers. And I think sometimes, you know, a lot of people who buy my online program, they might feel they may because of a partner or a sibling or someone saying, look, you know, you need to quit. But what's interesting is that the emotional conditioning is part of it, and that's really important. So people who are on the other side of it is when alcohol becomes more important than family life, alcohol becomes more important than financial stability, alcohol becomes the go-to for everything, where someone can't hold down a job and starts to, you know, have that very extreme, that very erratic behavior. And ultimately, when they decide that the booze is more important than anything in their lives.
Mm.
Now, some people say to me, well, Georgia, you know, I feel like that sometimes. I get home from work and I'm just sick and tired of looking after everybody else. And this is my me time. I'm saying, but that's okay. But you still got to work every day. You're not drinking in the morning. You're driving responsibly. You're doing all this sort of thing. It's just you get home, you close your doors. And, you know, in the beginning, that half bottle of wine might have been enough, but then it just creeps up because our tolerance increases. So therefore, that one glass that used to give us the fix, then we need two.
That makes sense. Okay, that's a really good differentiation. And so what are some signs that somebody might look for to determine if their drinking is a problem? I mean, is it that they're hungover in the morning? Is it that they do it every day? Is it the frequency? Like, what are some signs that you might, you know, if you're not an alcoholic, you just might want to, like, if you're still functioning, but you still, you know, might want to tone it down a bit?
Yeah. To answer your question best is there are two types of drinkers. And the psychology I'm trained in is there's one particular drinker, which is the perfectionist. And they're the all or nothing drinker. So they can abstain and they can have alcohol-free days really easily. They can go to a party when they're training for a marathon and sit on water all night. And they, but the issues with them is they're so highly driven. They're very, you know, they're goal related. So they'll set themselves a goal. But in the meantime, what happens is their anxiety levels are high. Their determination is amazing and it's exhausting. So after a period of time, that person says, I'm just going to have a drink. And they will binge drink. And they'll drink very, very quickly. So the perfectionist is the drinker where the bell doesn't ring. And they are high achievers. So they can be very conscious of their weight. They can be very conscious of their financial life. And sometimes all of the stresses of trying to be perfect just build up. And then they'll just blitz it. They'll cane it with the alcohol. So that type of drinker, how I would deal with that type of drinker is, you know, they can choose to abstain. A lot of perfectionists end up actually quitting drinking because they just can't get that middle ground of drinking. They just can't get that, you know, 2-3 glasses of wine at a party or, you know, 3 beers or whatever it is, because they just don't trust themselves with alcohol. So they tend to be the ones that will just quit. But what is underpinning that is that somewhere in their life, their brain decided that they had to be really perfect at everything, and they become perfect at over drinking as a way, because the brain gets hyper aware of the pressure they put themselves under. So the brain says in a nanosecond, you know, when you get to this stage, what do you do? Bingo, let's get the booze. And it's usually a very aggressive approach to alcohol consumption. So this drinker, this type of drinker, can often be in the doghouse with their husband or wife or children because, you know, they just can't seem to get that middle ground. And that's a big issue for a lot of drinkers.
I imagine it that would parlay into their food too and their overall healthy habits, right? Do you see that where somebody that is this perfectionist, high achiever type of person also can't seem to find a middle ground with their diet? Maybe they're way too restrictive. Have you noticed a correlation?
Yeah, I mean, I've got a program, The Weightless Mind, for that one. And that's exactly the point is the perfectionist, as I said, they're very highly anxious. They produce too much cortisol and too much adrenaline sometimes. And the chemical reaction in their body, and that could be because, you know, the perfectionist on a Monday will start out really, really well. But then maybe by Thursday, they have one extra almond. And then they go, I've blown it now, you know. So, And it's really about getting that person into that more logical, intuitive space. I said, you know what? I'm traveling at the moment for work. I have no choice but to have that dodgy sandwich in the local airport. I'm hungry. It's okay. And those are the sorts of things I talk about with the drinking thing is, you know, sometimes you might have an extra glass, but instead of saying, well, I've blown it now, I may as well have the whole bottle and a half. Mm-hmm. You're saying, well, it's okay. Or going to a party. I always say one of my top tips is for drinkers, don't drink things that your mind is not familiar with. So, for example, if you're only a beer drinker, don't have a tequila shot, because alcohol responds differently to the brain, which we now know, which is really interesting. And also, if your body and brain are not familiar with that type of alcohol, it can take you into a bit of a disaster zone.
Oh, wait. Okay, tell me more about how different alcohols affect the brain differently.
Yeah, well, they've done lots of studies now about the emotional conditioning with alcohol. And they have now proven, which was always a bit of an interesting one, being in the UK for 22 years, they're big gin drinkers. And gin is actually a depressant. Whenever I have a gin, I used to really make me depressed, really lifeless and negative. And they've now proven that alcohol, not for everybody, but for a lot of people, it can trigger that. But that can be the same for, you know, good old whiskey. I mean, a lot of people say to me, you know, I know life is getting a bit tricky when I have to have that whiskey before I go to bed at night. And it's kind of like, this is what I'm saying is the emotional conditioning is really key. And part of my program, the 7 days to drink less, is about people reframing in their own mind about the relationship with themselves emotionally so that they're not using the alcohol to escape their lives.
Totally. Fascinating. And then what are the other, like, I guess, stereotypes or scientific results? Like, what is tequila? Is that an upper? What about wine? Is that like a sleeper or like a, you know, ponder? Like, how do the other types of alcohol affect our brains?
Oh, well, tequila is a real buzzed up thing. I mean, that's just one of them. That's one of the reasons why tequila is so popular. It really gets you going, mm-hmm. you know? And wine makes people, it can make them very mellow. So it just really, all alcohol relaxes people, but wine is one of the most common drinks, in particular for women, to just relax and forget the day and just chill out and not be so bothered about things. Mm-hmm. You know, wine emotionally doesn't tend to trigger, well, it can trigger a lot of negative thinking as well, but I'm saying is that tends to be the most common tipple for women.
Got it. Okay, cool. Good to know. Okay, so you said there's the perfectionist drinker, and then what's the other type?
Then there's the pleaser, which is the nurturer. And the nurturer is the type of personality that doesn't have alcohol-free days necessarily. They're pretty much a consistent heavy drinker. You could resonate like, you know, the mom at the end of the day or the person who comes home from work and they're just really lonely. A lot of people drink because they're bored. People who live on their own find, well, I'll just have a drink because I call it like a solo party. You know, nothing wrong with a solo party, but sometimes it can get out of hand. And I find that somebody can really resonate with both personality traits. You don't have to have one or the other, but people tend to resonate with one more than the other. And if you're a pleaser, one of the biggest issues you have is that you find it difficult to say the word no, because pleasers don't want to be rejected. They want to be loved. They want to be liked. They want to feel that they're nurturing the world so that they're always accepted. And they will drink too much to please others, whereas the perfectionists will, they don't give a monkey's about whether it's a drinking day or not. They choose how they want to drink. They don't worry about offending other people. So they're quite different in terms of their energy, but they both represent big, big unhelpful ways of drinking. So the goal really is to, with the pleaser, is to get them into that middle ground of drinking where they're not, you know, they're drinking to please themselves rather than to be communicative, because a lot of pleasers won't have those difficult conversations until they drink. And I'm saying, you know what, the more you choose alcohol before you have challenging conversations with your husband, the more that they're going to blame the booze rather than the situation. So here are the little tools and techniques I help people with through the program.
So these are the two types of people that you help that are struggling in some way. They're not alcoholics, but they're struggling some way with alcohol, right? These aren't just like two types of people in the world, because I don't feel that I resonate necessarily with either one of them. I mean, is there a category for just like, I don't know, like social drinkers? I mean,
yeah, I mean, they're quite strong personality traits. I mean, the one that the umbrella of all of that is the inner critic. And the inner critic is the one that we all have and how we manage it. The inner critic is the one that says, you were really bad in that meeting today. I bet you're going to go home and drink too much. And you promised yourself you would have an alcohol-free day today. And I bet you're going to just, you know, have seven or eight beers or whatever it is. And what people don't realize is the inner critic, it's called the reptilian part of the brain. It's where the negative thinking comes from. But if you have a lot of inner, I call it negative dialogue. Some people, I call it radio crazy. Sometimes it's so bad for a lot of people. They get anxious and they get fearful of life, because even though the inner critic is not based on any truth, it will use your history of drinking as your reference point. So you're really damned if you do and damned if you don't sometimes, because it will kick in and say, oh, right, you've blown it now. You've had, you know, one glass of wine. And then what people don't realize is that when we drink alcohol, the inner critic goes away. And people aren't getting hooked into the alcohol. They're getting hooked into having that space from the inner critic. And social anxiety is a really big gig. So a lot of people will have that little sneaky drink before they go out just to calm their nerves.
Right.
Because the inner critic is saying, you'll be boring tonight if you don't drink, or, oh my God, you've got to go to this really high flyer professional and you're going to feel really crap about yourself. And all these things, which is really about self-esteem and anxiety, is a big key part of the work that I do. Because when you don't have that inner critic badgering you, you don't need to drink to run away from it.
You're so right. Oh my God, that is fascinating. So that when, I mean, putting words to that. So drinking gives you space from your inner critic. And so when people are struggling with self-esteem or anxiety, then drinking might be more likely to happen, or for them to rely on, to feel looser, to feel distance, like you said, from the inner critic. That is so fascinating. So do you think that most people that drink too much are struggling with inner critic issues?
I would say pretty much most of the time, yes.
Yeah. Wow. That's fascinating. And then as people, I guess, build their self-esteem, their confidence, their self-worth, do you find that they just don't care to drink anymore?
Well, a lot of people who do the program do end up deciding they just don't want to do it anymore because their self-esteem improves and they realize that they don't need the drink.
Yeah.
But majority of people, once they get that inner critic in check, they can go out and have a lovely wine. They can drink on their own. I mean,
yeah.
I find, you know, as I said, there's nothing wrong. I mean, I lived on my own for 9 years and there's nothing wrong with drinking at home. It's just that sometimes it is more than it really. I mean, if you wake up in the morning, and I'm very much like, well, if you win the lottery tonight, you might have a bit more champagne than normal. You know, there are times when it's okay, or it's your big, you know, 30th birthday or 40th, whatever it is. It's okay. But it's just, it's if the regular drinking is starting to haunt you and starting to affect you and really starting to make you feel that it's controlling you rather than you're controlling it, that is when I say it's a perfect time to do the program.
So you think it's cool for somebody to be like, oh man, I had a rough day, or ooh, that traffic was exhausting, or oh, my boss was so hard on me, or blah, 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 and turn to, even if it's just one, but a glass of wine or something at home to take the edge off? Do you think that that's a healthy way to cope with the stress of the day?
Well, the goal of the program is, yes, you can drink, but no, the thing is that through the day, so what happens when you're having that little stirring of the inner critic, and it will say all those things you said, plus could be a mum at the school gate thinking, oh, everybody's better than me or slimmer than me or whatever it is, you know, whatever it is. Then through the day, that person I'm suggesting probably won't drink. But through the day, there's this little stirring about, oh, I can't wait for that wine. Oh, I can't wait for that wine. And just to get me away from, to take the edge off. But the program is about training the brain and body to tune out of the inner critic before it can take hold. So that through the day, rather than the stress chemicals like cortisol and adrenaline building and building and building, is that they're dissipated through the day. So that through the day, that person is coping better, feeling better, their self-esteem improves. So that at the end of the day, if they want to drink wine, they can, or drink that beer or that whiskey or gin and tonic. It's just that they're not drinking from a frenzy space. Yeah. They're not driven to it.
This is why you say that one doesn't have a drinking problem. They have a thinking problem. That makes so much
absolutely.
Sense. This makes so much absolutely. Sense. And it's funny because I don't drink all that much, but when I do drink, usually I find myself, and this just makes so much sense, as you say, it's space from the inner critic. When I do drink, I'm always just like, woohoo! Like, I envision my big dreams. I like see them coming to life. I definitely feel more like, oh, I got this. Like, it's going to happen. Like, I wouldn't say it's necessarily more confident. It might be more confident, but it is. It's like whatever I actually feel when I have a glass of wine, that asshole inner critic doesn't get to chat with me. So I still feel the excitement and the dreams and all the stuff I want to create and be, but now I don't have that jerk up in my grill. So I totally see that.
Well, what's really amazing about the psychology, which I think is important to cover here, is because when we drink, the inner critic goes away, because we're hooked into that moment, people then become the world's best novelist, can become the world's most funniest person or the most sexy person or witty or, you know, all these things. And what I'm saying is you are that person sober. You really are that person sober.
Yes.
But you just need to get your brain to tune out the inner critic so you don't need to drink to be that person.
Wow.
And we call that a disowned self. A disowned self is the self that you feel you are that you can't be until you drink.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm saying, no, we got to get rid of all of that, because, you know, so many people say to me, you know, I said, what would you like to do if you weren't a lawyer or whatever? And they said, oh, Georgia, I'd really like to write a book. And I said, well, tell me about it. What's your book about? I said, well, you know, I feel guilty about this. I put the kids to bed and I'm sitting there with my laptop. I'm writing away. And all of a sudden I look over at the bottle of wine and, oh my God, the bottle of wine's gone. Where have I been? You know, kind of thing. And I said, what's the story about? I said, oh, look, I thought it was really good, but I woke up in the morning and I think, oh, that was terrible. I said, I bet you it wasn't. It was because the inner critic kicked in and said, no, you can't be a writer. No. But what I'm saying is when you do drink, sometimes it's a good way to find out what your aspirations are.
Totally. That makes so much sense. Yeah, because that's what I'm saying. If I drink and have a glass of wine, I'm just like, yeah, my truth that I know is there on a regular basis, but it just becomes more shiny. It becomes more elevated because that inner critic, which for me, I work, you know, a ton on silencing that inner critic jerk, and I'm quite successful in that, but it's still there a little bit because I know when I do have a glass of wine, I do sometimes feel like unstoppable.
Yeah. And that's who you are sober. And think what's brilliant about understanding how to, because obviously with the hypnosis is you are working on a deeper level, you're working with the neural pathways, and on that, in that space, you know, we know about neuroplasticity, and you know, even though you're thinking about your drinking, not you personally, but you know, people listening here today, is that even though this might be what you think is normal thinking, it's not, it's habitual thinking. And you can change that. And that's why hypnosis is such a powerful tool, because it's quick, you know, because if you consciously want to drink less, but your unconscious mind, that, you know, subconscious mind says, But we drink to calm down. We drink to be creative. We drink to be sexy. We drink to be more witty. We drink to sleep because sleep's another one. Ooh. Then because the inner critic is what keeps people awake. And people drink, that's what happens. That's why people need to drink to go to sleep.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So the inner critic's just like bombarding you with jerky thoughts and that you can't shut up to go to sleep. Or worry thoughts or beating yourself up about other things you did, just all the bad stuff.
Yeah, I mean, you can have a really busy day and not have time to even think about the inner critic, but then in the quiet of the night, you hop into bed and it's all dark and the inner critic goes, bang, I've got you now.
Oh. How do you define inner critic, you personally?
Well, for me, in my history, I had alcohol and food issues. I was always on a diet. I was the life and soul of the party. And don't get me wrong, I still drink. You know, I have alcohol-free days every week. But it's more to do with the fact that I know the signs. If I feel vulnerability or feeling scared, they're the things that define me with my inner critic and my relationship with it. So if I do anything new, because, you know, my top tip, another one, is that when you want to do something new, the inner critic will kick and say, that's not going to be possible, because it doesn't have any references. So part of the program is teaching the mind to have the right references so that the inner critic can't complain and say, we don't have those, because you've already got them in your brain. It's a very good future technique that I take people into their drinking future so that their mind then can see before they say yes to that drinking at the bar or, you know, hanging out with friends that they're not that comfortable with or having to go and have a drink with their boss who they're nervous about, is that do some future drinking training in your brain before you get there so that your brain then says, oh, I'm familiar with feeling safe around people who make me feel slightly uncomfortable. I don't need to drink to feel better or to be more funny. And what I love about this particular technique, I use it with sports people, performers, actors, singers, whatever, and it really, really helps the confidence to say yes to new experiences because it means their mind is already familiar with the moment before they get there. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. Totally. I mean, that's why athletes, you know, visualize themselves achieving their athletic feat, because when you get to the actual free throw line to shoot your foul shot, or you get to the bars to do your gymnastics routine, you've already been there in your mind so many times. So you're like, oh, I got this.
Yeah, no. And that's why, like with a footballer, I'm working with a footballer at the moment, and you know, he's got massive anxiety because he's very, very well known. And I said to him, the only reason why you having all this anxiety is because your inner critic is playing games with you. Mm-hmm. Now, you know, doing this future technique is fantastic at combating that inner critic. And I think it's important that drinkers have the same principle. The inner critic, before they go out, says, I bet you're going to have that sneaky drink. And then you get instantly anxious. And then you think, I'm going to have that sneaky drink. You know, wow. So it becomes a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Quick little interrupt here, and don't fast forward because you will love this free thing. I have compiled a list, a free list, which you can download at partyinmyplants.com/booklist, one word, book list, that contains every single book recommended by or written by the guests of my podcast over the past 3 years. I wanted to make it easy as apple pie for you to eat up the words from all of the books that my guests over the past 150 episodes have said will inspire you in some awesome way. So I made you this free list with all of them. Go snag it at partyinmyplants.com/booklist and get your eyes feasting on healthy for your head stuff. Or listen to the audiobook so you can get your ears feasting on it too. Your ears absorbing it, right? Okay. Anyway, again, the list is at partyinmyplants.com/booklist. Did I mention it's free? So what's some way that somebody could start practicing that at home?
Well, I think what's really important is to diarize what the inner critic is saying, because what it says is not the truth. It's just a reference point. It's something that maybe, you know, in terms of drinking, is part of the history, but it doesn't mean it's your future. So write down what the inner critic says.
How do you find that out?
Well, just write down what your negative talk is. Write down what your negative talk is. Like when you feel scared, what are you saying to yourself?
Right.
When you want to do something different or new? What are you scared of? What's being said?
What thoughts? Because, yeah. You know, sometimes I think people, I mean, I used to be this way years and years and years ago, but, you know, your negative talk can just sound like your talk. Like, for people that don't know how to differentiate, this is my just normal talk, but it's not positive, like, versus, oh, this is clearly my inner critic. Like, how does somebody know the difference? It's not like we're crazy and have different voices in our heads, different tones and different sounds. Like, how do you actually differentiate between, like, oh, this is just like my rational mind and this is my inner critic?
Yeah. Well, the part that says, I want to do something different, the part that wants to look after your own health and well-being, that's the intuitive part, the confident part. Now, what just happened over through life is that the inner critic has become the most vocal.
Yeah.
That we actually think it's us. And when I learned this particular psychology training, I went to California and trained with the creators of this Jungian psychology. I didn't realize that my inner critic was running my life. You know, I just thought this was me.
Yeah.
When I realized it wasn't me, I'm like, oh my God, there's a whole world out there that I belong to.
Right. That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah.
So that is really what's about is, you know, write down the opposite. What is it that you want to feel? What is it you want to say to yourself? And even though it may feel foreign or it may feel uncomfortable because your inner critic goes, that's not true. It is true. Because it's been proven time and time again that the brain is adaptable and pliable to emotional conditioning and changes. So it just needs the rehearsal. It just needs the right practice. It just needs some time. Mm-hmm. And so the inner critic then, when people recognize that whenever they feel, and a great way to do it would be, you know, for a drinker is when they think about drinking, why do I want to drink? What's going on? You know, why am I feeling scared or vulnerable? Why am I feeling anxious? Why am I feeling this? Because the inner critic will, that's when it starts to kick in. That's when it starts to play games. So it's a really good way of understanding. And also the inner critic will give you a hard time about your drinking. Oh, well, there you go again. There you go again. You failed again. And so it just, you know, even if it's just about the drinking and realize that, say, look, you know what? I'm going to drink, but not from this space. I'm going to drink from an intuitive place. There isn't that intensity to drink. So it does take some practice for some people, but it's incredibly liberating when people realize that not all of me thinks I'm this person, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. When you can separate your true self from your inner critic, that's so liberating.
Mm, absolutely.
Wow. So why don't you ever, or I don't know if you ever do, but I don't think you tell people to cut it out. I feel like you're more about reducing alcohol than cutting it out fully, right? I feel like I read that in researching you. Why is that the case? Like, why don't you ever tell somebody like, all right, you just got to stop like full throttle?
Yeah. I mean, I always say to people, if you are worried that you might need to quit, try the program. I mean, it's a 60-day money back guarantee. So you've got plenty of time to trial it. I think that because society, and I'm not being critical or judgmental of the media, but sometimes, and also the way things have been managed in terms of what, that we all put everybody who drinks too much into the same box, they just need to quit, that there is a big percentage of Americans who know they drink too much, but and they don't know how to cut back, but because they don't understand the conditioning in the brain first. Mm-hmm. And that's what's great about it, is I'm not saying it's going to be for everybody, but I mean, I get incredible feedback on the program. Because people think, oh, my God, Georgia, I didn't realize. I mean, you know, it's a classic email comes from, you know, somebody will say, oh, my husband's really critical of my drinking and it really annoys me because he can sit on one beer all night and it drives me mad. And then I'm sitting there thinking, I really want that third glass of wine, but he might, you know, look at me, give me that kind of look, you know. But that's enough sometimes because even after the first glass, the inner critic starts to shut down. And then people become rebellious and they think, oh, well, sod you, I'm going to have another drink. And then that vicious cycle of drinking too much and the relationship dynamic starts to shift. And then that's when the sneaky drinking can start, where I hear a lot of this is people say, look, my children, which is another reason why a lot of people look at the program, are old enough and getting critical and saying, you know, mom, do you really need that extra glass of wine?
Mm.
But then the mom says, well, I'll just make up for it when they go to bed.
Oh,
you know? And then it becomes sneaky drinking, and then the guilt drinking comes in because the inner critic says, you're hiding your alcohol now. So they're all very much signs that that person needs to look at the issue.
Yeah.
But that part of it is because when you have alcohol police in your house, you're anxious around them. And we know what the brain does is when you're anxious, it says, get me out of here. What do I do? And ironically, it's drink.
It's such a cycle.
So I really help people with all of that kind of stuff with the, and I'm not saying that the alcohol police are bad. They're there because they're loving and caring, but people who don't drink or people who have got it in a really good, you know, they control it really well. They don't get it. They could sit there. I mean, this happens so often. People say to me, you know, my husband's really critical of my drinking, and yet he can sit there and have a whole block of chocolate, you know, or have three or four pieces of cake, or, you know, smoke 20 cigarettes, or, you know, I mean, we all have our vices. And I'm saying, well, you know, it's just that alcohol is given a bit of a bad rap when it comes to one of the emotional coping strategies. And I understand that it is an issue, and it can change, you know, relationships really into a very destructive space. But part of that is getting somebody before they get to that stage that they can be in a better place about alcohol.
So would you say that all the vices, or at least the ones you listed, like sugar or cigarettes, are they also coping strategies for, you know, silencing the inner critic somehow?
Absolutely. I mean, people don't realize that sugar, you know, induces dopamine. I mean, alcohol does the same thing. There's a lot of sugar in alcohol, you know. So,
yeah.
And although alcohol will change the structure of the brain and how we respond, sugar can do the same thing for many people. And it's not because the sugar calms them down. It's not because the cigarettes calm them down, because cigarettes don't calm you down. They actually make you really anxious because of the chemicals. But it's the psychological connection to it, you know.
Really,
that's what makes the difference. It's not the actual substance itself. It's the emotional conditioning that is what the brain thinks. It's just, I mean, you know, no one's born a racist. Nobody is born with a fear of flying. It's a learnt condition that happens.
And so would you say when people are like craving alcohol, for, you know, like you said, like, you know, they go through the whole day and they're like, gosh, I just can't wait for my glass of wine or my gin and tonic. When they're quote unquote craving it like that, or sugar, you know, sugar's a real issue as well. Do you think then that they're craving not the actual substance, but the emotional release that comes from that substance, or the emotional numbing? Then is it more of an emotional craving than a physiological one based on the substance of alcohol or sugar?
Not for everybody. There are some people who, when they decide they want to reduce their drinking, they will increase their chocolate. And then they'll say to me, Georgia, I've just transferred this from alcohol to chocolate. And say, no, you haven't. It's just that your body is so used to the high level of sugar is that it's demanding it in another way. So it does balance out. It will alkaline itself. It's just it takes a bit of time. That's all.
Interesting. Very, 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 very interesting. So again, using hypnosis, are there techniques that people can do at home to start, if they're listening and they're like, okay, I think I look a little too forward to that PM glass of wine and I would like to phase that out or get a hold on that. Is there something they could do right now to start working on that? Besides, I know the first step is really identifying your inner critic, but what would the next step be?
Well, it's about reducing that anxiety. I mean, it's a very good technique, and it's just a breath technique where you just take in, you take one big belly breath, like a Pilates yoga breath, and you hold, you count for five, and then you release it and completely empty your belly of oxygen, and then you count for five. So you repeat this in-out technique. And what it does is it resets your brain, and it is a just, it's really a distraction technique. And you could also incorporate it there, sing Ba Ba Black Sheep, and that would be really good too. So what it does is it actually breaks the state of that emotional anxiety conditioning of drinking. Another top tip is a lot of people are thirsty. Most people don't drink enough water. Have a really big glass of water before you drink, because when you drink alcohol, if you're dehydrated, your body's saying, oh, get me more liquid. Come on, bring it on. You know,
yeah.
I'm saying get the water in first before the beer or the wine or the tequila. And I think what's really important is to honor that, you know, even if you're worried about your drinking, part of this is pure habit. So doing something for an hour before you have your first drink, do something different, train your brain to be somewhere else for another hour. And then it gets used to it, you know, part of the hypnosis is becoming familiar really quickly, but you can do it. It takes longer consciously, but you know, just go and do something different. Break the state. Go out and hang out with a friend who wants to go to a movie, who doesn't drink, or do something. Because once you start to incorporate alcohol-free days or start to drink later, it just liberates you. You know, just shows your brain and body that you can do things differently with when it comes to drinking alcohol.
Absolutely. So when you say to do those belly breaths, are you doing that like during the day while visualizing something, or are you doing that like when you're about to reach for that drink? Like how do that, when are you supposed to implement that?
Oh, anytime you feel any anxiety, any inner critic moment. I always suggest that, you know, breath is, we know that when people are anxious, they shallow breathe. And that's what causes the chemical reaction. And that's why alcohol is a quick fix, because it's quick. It is, isn't it? So just work with that belly breath. So, you know, hold for five, in, out, hold for five. And I said, sing Ba Ba Black Sheep, whatever you want to do. And it's important to understand that nobody needs to know you're doing it. So because it's something you can do, maybe just go to the bathroom and do it there or in the car when you're not driving, obviously, just as it, you know, just take some time out, because the one thing is we forget that we're so busy that we just don't take enough time for ourselves. And that's what's important with the hypnosis. I say to people, you know, that the recording, the hypnosis recordings are 25 minutes each. And yes, of course, it's about drinking less, but there's so many other messages on there. Taking time out, pleasing yourself. You don't have to be perfect. Life is what it is. You can't control other people. There are people out there who aren't very nice. And you know what? So what? You know?
Yeah.
It's about just getting that logical thinking back into your brain before you drink. Because, you know, the truth is that alcohol doesn't make anything better.
That's true.
You know what? I want drinking to be something that people can enjoy without the guilt and the angst of what is it going to make me feel like the next day? Is it going to make me feel really bad about myself?
Right.
And ultimately it will, if that's where your language is coming from, that's what's going to happen, you know.
Totally. Is it ever simple, like just not bringing alcohol into your house? Like can you, you know, like is that ever an effective solution or no?
Look, I mean, it depends where you live. I guess if it's a bit of a pain to drive somewhere, I don't know. But I think that's sometimes a bit of a cruel thing. I think, you know, the goal would be that you could have alcohol in your house and you just don't really care about it. You know what I mean?
Right.
That you think, well, you know what, I can have a drink tonight, but I may not. I think that it's a bit like, you know, a client said to me, Georgia, I've decided to start drinking red wine because I don't like it. I'm like, well, that's not really, because then you're associating red wine with endurance, pain, negative thinking. And ironically, you'll end up going back to the white wine because it's what you like. And then you think you failed.
Got it.
Don't make it a chore. You know, on those alcohol-free nights, don't do your tax return. Do something fun.
Yeah, that's funny. How many alcohol-free nights do you suggest for people?
I think two minimum is really good. I mean, that's the standard that they say all doctors should say you should do. And also alcohol-free days is not just about that it's good for your liver. It's good for your mind, because when you think about alcohol-free days, you know, sleep does get better. You know, on a week where you don't have many social events, I'd say, you know, maybe try and get three in. Yeah, I say don't set it in stone if you're in Hawaii for the week on holiday, you know, and you want to drink every day, that's fine. I'm not about what the standard glass is or what should or shouldn't be. It's about, you know, a lot of people who buy my program are drinking a lot more than the standard measurement that the government suggests. But the government suggestion is not based on truth either. I'm not encouraging people to drink more, but, you know, they got together with the medical association and decided that Americans drink too much, as the Australian government did, as the British government did. And they realized that they thought that if we teach people about where we think they should be with their drinking, like calories and fat grams and salt grams, that they would just do it. But what they realized that most people, when they go to their doctor and the doctor says, how many alcoholic drinks do you consume a week, that people were lying by up to three times the real quantity.
Oh, wow.
So they actually reduced it by three and added a bit more, thinking that people would just listen. But the irony is, we know as adults, especially when you have a drink under your belt, if somebody tells you you can only have one, you want two. So I say to people, don't look at that measurement. The goal is that you're just naturally drinking less, that you're drinking slowly, because a lot of anxious drinkers drink quickly.
Okay.
Getting your mind into the right space before you drink. so you're not drinking so quickly, hydrating yourself with water, improving your self-esteem before you drink. All of these things make for a perfect, beautiful storm for drinking less.
Perfect. Oh, I love it. Tied that up with a bow. That's wonderful. So let me ask you my final planty questions, and then I'll let you go on with the entire day you still have ahead of you. So yeah. What is your favorite plant to eat?
Coriander. Or you call it something else,
cilantro.
Don't you?
Cilantro.
Cilantro. I love it.
I love cilantro.
It's my favorite.
What do you do? Just put it on everything?
Oh, I have it on my salads. Whenever I have a salad. Uh-huh. I love that with mixture of parsley.
Yeah, I put it in herb lady.
Yeah, I love them. We have them in our garden here. It's beautiful.
Cool.
I like the continental, the flat parsley. So I mix it together with that. Make it with a beautiful, curries. Oh, everything. I have it on everything.
Yum. What is your favorite drink?
I absolutely love peppermint tea. I don't drink tea or coffee. And my alcoholic drink of choice is a low oak Chardonnay.
Wow, very specific. I like it. Mm-hmm. What is the best thing, your favorite thing that you do for self-care or for silencing your inner critic?
Well, I do hypnosis 3 or 4 times a week. So that's my go-to thing. That's my first port of call is when things get a bit too much, I actually go and do hypnosis and I do a lot of future technique work. Calm it down, which is brilliant. Absolutely. Look, it's just part of my, my life.
Yeah.
And also I absolutely love going to the gym. I put my gym is opposite a beautiful big lake and I put my headset on and I get Spotify on and I just go for it on the treadmill.
Oh, and you can see the beautiful lake, you're saying?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
That's absolutely awesome. Beautiful. That's great. So when you say the visual of the future work with hypnosis, is this something that people can only do if they, get your program and listen to your hypnosis recordings? Or is there a technique they can do at their own? Like as somebody's falling asleep tonight, is it enough to just sort of visualize their future tomorrow or visualize, maybe they're nervous about drinking at an upcoming wedding. Can they just visualize them dancing with confidence at the wedding without alcohol? Is that effective?
Yeah. Yeah. The emotions are the most important part because a lot of people aren't visual.
Yeah.
And it's also another really important part of the technique is, feeling the feeling. So what I do is I call it marrying. So when you think of a time when you felt really good about yourself, doesn't have to be about drinking, anything, and then bring in those feelings and then imagine yourself past the event, waking up the next morning after the event has gone and looking back and feeling proud about how that evening went with your drinking. So it's not just during it, but also after. And that's what I would do. If a client has a fear of flying, I take them to their holiday zone, but also back home. So when they're back home and think, wow, I got on that plane, I went there, I came back, and that was great. I mean, that's kind of a very simple analogy. But what I'm saying is the more you rehearse the feelings of being in control, drinking in a positive way, the more your mind becomes familiar and becomes comfortable with the experience and the things that you've been there. So it actually genuinely thinks, oh, I know how to do it now, and it will just enact upon it.
Wow. Yeah. I do that actually all the time on a plane. If I'm nervous, if there's like turbulence, I close my eyes and think about like wherever I'm going, getting into that bed or that hotel or getting dinner or like anything that's happening shortly thereafter in order to get out of that turbulent spot. But so for this like wedding example I just came up with, actually I have a wedding I'm going to in a few weeks, so it's a good example. But for somebody who's like, oh, I don't want to be hungover, I hate being hungover after a wedding, and I get hungover so easy with like 3 drinks, I'm dead the next day. So maybe I would visualize myself the next day feeling awesome at the brunch, being like, woo, yeah, last night was so fun. I felt so hot in my dress, da 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 da. Like that's what you're suggesting somebody does.
Yeah, and I don't know, speaking of weddings, people do laugh about this, but I don't know what it is about weddings, but maybe it's because the alcohol's free and you tend to be out of your comfort zone.
And it's so long. It's like such a long, you can't keep track.
Yeah. And the thing, I say that weddings just trigger lots of bad behavior when it comes to drinking.
Yes.
So really it is about hydrating yourself and making sure, because I know with a lot of weddings when they've got staff looking after you and you keep pouring your drink and you can't Just, you know, just finish that one glass and then go and have another one. Don't let them top them up.
Oh, it's so hard because you'll just be chatting with somebody and then all of a sudden your glass is full again. So you have no way of keeping track of how much you're drinking. It's a nightmare.
Yeah.
Weddings are the death of me.
And also, you know, people are socially shy and they think, oh, who am I going to have to sit next to at the table?
Yeah.
And,
speaking of inner critic, like if you're single or if you're, you know, whatever, anything in the romantic realm with your inner critic can spark so much stuff. It's a mess. Body image, everything.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Oh. I mean, all of those things, I completely agree with you. And it's a bit like, you know, people say to me, oh, you know, one of the reasons why I don't want to go to the wedding is everybody else is a couple.
Yeah.
And then a client said to me, oh, but I drink too much. And they're thinking, oh, you know, and the inner critic starts to make you feel sorry for yourself. And I don't like any of that, mm-hmm. you know, because I always say it takes more courage to be single than in a relationship. I really do. I mean, I've got a program called Cracking the Love Code. And I always think that for women in particular is that there's such a stigma for being single. And it just really, really winds me up. I just think there's a lot of people in very compromised relationships, and I think that being single should be a time where you should be really proud because you're being discerning. You're actually not just settling for someone who's not right for you.
Bravo.
It's got to be the right person.
Yeah, bravo. Okay, what is a book that has inspired you in an awesome way?
Ooh, I loved The Power of Now. Mm-hmm. That definitely resonated with me. And do you know, it's such a long time since I've read a book. It's quite embarrassing to say that.
Well, you have three triplets, so cut yourself some slack.
I do have a very, well, I think the thing for me is I just love what I do. I work long hours and I love what I do. And I just think that, you know, I'm very passionate about helping people realize that they can change their relationship with alcohol into better space. So yeah, I do have quite a lot of self-help books on my book list to read because I like to hear what other people have got to say, but I just don't seem to get the time.
Yeah. Audiobooks. Do it while you're going to the lake.
That would not be a bad idea, actually. Yeah. Definitely.
You're welcome.
Good idea.
Thank you. Here to help.
Thank you.
Okay. Where can everybody stay connected to you and check out your programs? It sounds like you have a great one on relationships or non-relationships. You have one on drinking, eating, all sorts of things. So where can everybody go find that?
Yeah, my website is georgiafoster.com. So Georgia as in the state of America, foster.com as in the beer, georgiafoster.com.
I didn't know that was a beer.
And everything is there. Any questions, please let me know. I'm here. And if I'm not here, I've got people who do the support desk overnight, things like that. So
amazing.
Somebody will definitely answer within 24 hours.
Great. Well, thank you so much. This was so fascinating. And now I'm going to really think about my drinking differently at this wedding.
Good. Well, enjoy. Where's your wedding?
It's in Atlanta, Georgia, actually.
Oh,
there you
fantastic.
Go. The state. Yeah. So
I will enjoy.
Fun. Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Thanks so much for listening to the Party in My Plants podcast. Truthfully, this episode surprised me. The thing that really stuck with me is how badly I want to be the version of me who fully believes in my dreams like I am after a glass and a half of vino. Seriously, so often when I get a little buzz-a-luzz-luzz going on, I feel so freely confident and I'm just like totally embodying all of my visions and all of my dreams. And it's like this full body, oh my God, it's going to happen. It's already happening. And God, it is the best feeling. So since I recorded this chat, which was actually a few months ago, I've really tried to access that feeling without the tipsiness. And it's worked quite magnificently. Sometimes I go there mentally when I'm running or I'm showering or I'm just lying in bed. Highly recommend. I also highly recommend mixing kombucha with tequila or vodka for the best cocktail ever, which my upcoming cookbook will teach you a heck of a lot more about. Oh, another bevy combo I swear by is Sun Warrior's plant protein in any and all smoothies. They actually just came out with this incredibly cool collagen-building plant protein powder. This stuff is so rad. Instead of a collagen supplement that comes from the bones, the skin, and the connective tissue of fish, cattle, pigs, or even horses? Sun Warriors come up with an ingenious plant party solution. Instead, they have a combo pack of raw nutrients from plants that our bodies convert efficiently into collagen. Woohooey. You can try it for 20% less than the average human if you use code PARTYINMYPLANTS at checkout on sunwarrior.com. And you can learn a lot more about that. You can learn about ways to make eating more plants less sucky. And you can get a recap of this episode all about making hangovers less frequent in the show notes at partyinmyplants.com/154.